Fletch Reflected by Gregory MacDonald. Copyright 1994 by Gregory MacDonald. This recording of the full-length reading of Fletch Reflected was published by arrangement with Gelfman Schneider Literary Agents, Incorporated.
It was produced in 1996 by Books on Tape, Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto.
Neither this recording nor any part thereof may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authority from Books on Tape, Incorporated. This book is read by Grover Gardner. Please observe the following procedures as you listen to these tapes. If you have borrowed this book from your local library, please return it to them at the end of the agreed period. If you are one of our regular rental customers, you may keep your book for 30 days from date of receipt by you, but after that time, we charge additional rental of 25 cents per day. Dates are checked by postmark. Please return this book at the earliest possible time so another subscriber can have the use of this recording. To return cassettes to us, simply make sure they are all packaged in their plastic cassette cases and in proper order in the mailing container. Kindly seal the mailing container for return. Postage is already paid. Drop in any mailbox for return to Books on Tape. Should a cassette fail to play properly, hold it flat in the palm of your hand and slap it smartly against a hard, flat surface. If this does not work, or if you cannot otherwise free the reels, and if you are a library customer, please ask your local library to contact Books on Tape for a replacement cassette. If you are one of our rental customers, please call us at our regular customer service number. Give us the name of the book and number of the cassette. We will immediately send you a replacement at no charge. Discard the broken cassette. Fletch Reflected by Gregory MacDonald. This book consists of 26 chapters and is 222 pages long. The following material appears on the dust jacket of the book. The New York Times hails Gregory MacDonald as one of the best writers we have. Now he is back with a new generation Fletch mystery. When Fletch's newfound son Jack decides to help a former lover in distress, his kindness brings him trouble. Shauna Stoffel is about to marry the son of a multimillionaire, the eccentric inventor of the perfect mirror. But her prenuptial bliss is marred by fears that someone is trying to kill Chester Radley, her fiancé's father. Jack agrees to go undercover to investigate and is drawn into a bizarre and increasingly deadly family drama. Jack's arrival is marked with an explosion in the research lab which instantly kills a scientist. Obviously, the intended victim, Chester Radley, is in serious danger. What Jack doesn't know is that the explosion is only the beginning of a killer's quest to murder the inventor. As things heat up, Jack learns there are more suspects than guests at the Radley estate. He also knows that if he isn't careful, he could be the next accidental fatality. As he runs out of solutions, Jack is left with one alternative. But Dad, his last best hope, is busy trying to help his son's mother recover from diet madness. With some misgivings, Fletch interrupts his worthy endeavor to help Jack out of another predicament, thrusting the duo back into action. Fletch Reflected is Gregory MacDonald at his fresh, witty, irreverent best. Gregory MacDonald is the author of 22 books, including 9 Fletch novels and 3 Flynn mysteries. For his Fletch novels, he has twice won the Mystery Writers of America's prestigious Edgar Award for Best Mystery, the only mystery writer to have been so honored. He lives in Tennessee. Chapter 1. Fayoni. In fact, he was answering the telephone at Andy Sist's desk in the huge Global Cable News building in Virginia. He had no desk or telephone of his own. The switchboard knew he was working with Andy Sist. Fletch? Who is this? The young woman's voice said, Is this Fletch? Yeah, Jack, Fayoni, Fletch. I know your name is Jack Fayoni. The weekend we spent together, you had me call you Fletch. When was that? Skiing, in Stowe, Vermont, a few years ago. We met there, at the shed. You were with some other guys from a lumber camp, playing your guitar. People were buying you beer to keep you playing. Well, I sort of kidnapped you. First, I kidnapped your guitar. Her voice was low and warm. When you pursued me to the parking lot to get your guitar back, I grabbed you. It was snowing. You were very hot. I ripped your shirt. I pulled it down off your shoulders. Do you remember the snowflakes falling on your sweating shoulders while we kissed? You sizzled.
Good grief. Whoever you are, woman, you just elevated my temperature by more than a little. I'm hot now.
Sticking a finger inside his shirt collar, Jack scanned the huge, brightly lit, colorful, air-conditioned room filled with journalists' workstations.
I wasn't a minute ago.
You were very playful, silly. You don't remember me?
I do.
She had coal-black hair, very wide-set coal-black eyes.
And her name was?
I remember you weren't there when I woke up.
I had to meet my father early for Belgian waffles. It really wasn't a weekend we spent together, just a few lovely hours.
I remember it was a cold morning, and I had to run through the snow in a flannel shirt torn to shreds. Thanks for leaving me my guitar, anyway.
You use your hands beautifully.
Why didn't you come back? Leave a note, something.
I had to ski with my father. Then he drove me back to Poughkeepsie.
I waited. He had not waited long. The snow was pure powder, the skiing too good to miss.
I wasn't sure you weren't a dream.
Anyway, I've been seeing your name on GCN the last few days. Those great stories about the tribe.
Thanks, I guess.
You're working for GCN now?
I guess so. I'm here. They've used everything I brought them.
That's great. But they never showed your face on television. If it was your story, why didn't they use you on camera?
One doesn't do that.
One doesn't? A lot do.
People come to recognize you. Then you can't do the kind of stories I want to do.
Oh, you must have been working on that story a long time.
It took a long time to set up. Once it got going, it went quickly. Very quickly.
So guess where I am?
You like games, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Let me think. You're in jail?
No.
You're in hospital, with some horrible disease the doctor says you must tell me about.
No.
I give up.
Jack rearranged some papers on Andy Sist's desk.
Why don't you remind me of your name, if you ever shared it with me in the first place? Tell me where you are, if that's relevant to the conversation. Then tell me why you called. You've talked so long, I'm beginning to need a shower.
We didn't do all that much talking, as I remember. We went at each other like bear cubs.
I don't care who you are. I don't care where you are. I don't care why you're calling. Goodbye.
Stoffel.
Is that a name or an order?
Shauna Stoffel.
Oh, yes, Shauna. So where are you, Shauna?
Vindemia.
Vindemia. I've read that word somewhere. What is it, defunct coal mines in Appalachia, what?
One of the biggest estates in America.
Oh, yeah, in Georgia? Owned by...
Actually, I'm calling you from a phone booth outside the Vindemia gas station and general store. The estate has its own little village, complete with chapel, library, and many, many rent-a-cops.
Cute. Owned by the guy who invented,
Chester Radley. He invented the perfect mirror.
Oh, yeah. The guy who straightened out our left from our right, right from left when we look at ourselves in a mirror.
Right. Chester Radley. Massive implications for industry, science, space.
You sound like you're quoting from Business Digest.
I am. I looked him up before I met him.
Boxers appreciate his mirror, too.
They do.
They don't get blindsided so much these days. Haven't you noticed?
Guess I haven't.
More fights go the whole 10-15 rounds now.
Is that good?
Think of the philosophical, psychological, to say nothing of poetic ramifications of the perfect mirror. I mean, for centuries we were seeing ourselves wrong, weren't we? Not as others saw us, as they say.
Do we ever anyway?
I'd like to meet him. Radley must have an interesting mind. To take a thing as ancient and simple as the mirror and realize it was wrong. It was backward. In the clear mirror of thy ruling star, I saw, alas, some dread event depend.
Who said that?
Before I did, a guy named Pope.
I'm going to marry Chet.
What's a Chet?
Chester Radley, Jr.
Oh, you called to invite me to your wedding? I'll send a present. Shreds of my flannel shirt as a keepsake or a dust cloth, whichever you need the more.
Not exactly.
What then?
To invite you here.
Where, Vindemia?
Yes.
You need someone to speak up for you? A playmate reference, perhaps?
This is the first time I've ever been here. I've come to meet the family.
I don't get it. Why would you need me? Even want me in the same state?
You're an investigative reporter.
Thanks.
There's something real weird about this place. These people.
Sure, they got very, very rich very, very fast. Who said wealth doesn't corrupt as much as it reveals?
Pope?
I don't think so. I want you to come here. I can say you're my cousin. As I remember, we look nothing alike.
Sometimes cousins don't. You could just be passing by and drop in for a few days.
Sure. You're marrying into a maxi-wealthy family, get brought home by Chet Ditto to meet Mama, Papa, and the Borzoi Hound, and your distant relatives start landing on them asking directions to their larder. What kind of an impression would that make?
This place is so big, there are so many people wandering around, you wouldn't even be noticed.
Yeah, I do a pretty good imitation of a potted palm. You telling me you think there's a story for me here somewhere? What is it? The guy's been profiled a million times. A Massachusetts Institute of Technology professor of physics invents the perfect mirror, makes zillions of dollars between a Tuesday and Friday, buys half the state of Georgia, builds a 50-room mansion. 72 rooms.
Really?
I thought I was exaggerating.
The roof is 5 acres.
Lord love a duck, I've been on farms smaller than that.
5 acres, they tell me. It looks it.
Has a gorgeous, well-behaved family.
That's where the profile goes awry.
They're not a gorgeous, well-behaved family.
They're gorgeous.
She hesitated. So?
I think they want to kill him.
What? Who?
Chester Radley. I think his family wants to murder him. His friends, the people who work for him. Everybody around him. I'm afraid one of them will succeed.
What on earth makes you say a thing like that? Is he that much of a bastard?
He's a wonderful man.
Then why do you say such a thing?
I don't know exactly. Things are weird here, little things. Everything is so tight, you know, security. Yet these weird little things keep happening. I think Chester, Mr. Radley, thinks he has invented the perfect mirror in his family. All the people he has collected around him, except they're not perfect. They seem to want to leap at him.
Andy Sist was walking from the administration offices toward his desk. The room was so big, Jack thought there was a need for conveyor belts on the floor. It was not a city room. It was a world room. A cosmic room. Jack took his feet off the edge of Andy's console desk.
That's why I want you to come here, Shauna continued. Investigate this. There's so much tension. I'm afraid of what's going to happen.
Jack stretched the muscles of his upper back. He had had an exciting but exhausting few weeks. Well, I'd like to meet Mr. Radley, as I said, Jack said into the phone. But I do have a job, I think, and you understand I can't drop everything and come to some Valhalla in the sky, pass myself off as some itinerant relation to the daughter-in-law-to-be, just in case the butler spits in Daddy's mock turtle soup. You do understand that, don't you?
What can I do to persuade you?
Make me believe there's a story here.
Is story all that matters to you? I've heard you play the guitar. I've had you in bed. The whole world has just seen this wonderful expose of the tribe you've done. You mean to tell me you don't care about people?
Get some evidence. Find me a plan to collapse those 5 acres of roof on Chester Radley.
I was hoping you'd do that. Find evidence, I mean.
I have a life, lady.
Lucky you.
Give me your phone number just in case old Chester gets carted off to the hospital with a case of botulism or something. She recited the main number of the estate.
There's a switchboard, she said. I'm in the American Girl Rose suite.
Andy stepped into his workstation. What does that mean? Jack asked.
The suites don't have numbers. Each is named after a particular flower or plant. My suite is called the American Girl Rose Suite.
Ah, I see. Sounds homey enough. Does it come complete with pricks?
Homey enough if your last name is Windsor. Will you at least think about it?
I don't see how I can.
Shauna Stoffel sighed. Okay, well, it was nice meeting you. Nice talking to you.
Best wishes, Jack said, on your marriage. A story? Andy asked. A girl. Jack stood up. Alex Blair asked me to tell you to come to his office right away.
Who's he?
His office is down the central corridor, right next to the CEO's. Andy sat in his chair. He's waiting for you now.
Okay.
Jack?
Yeah.
You know, one of my assignments here is to answer the phone to Mr. Fletcher. He's a stockholder, a director. He has a past in this business, at least print journalism. I don't know. Was a respected journalist, I guess. I've heard he was. I've heard he wasn't. Sometimes he calls me 3 and 4 times a day.
then weeks will go by when I don't hear from him at all, when he has story ideas and needs some research done.
Sounds like a tough assignment.
No, Andy said, it's interesting. I try to figure out what he's doing, thinking, what he's working on by the questions he asks. He's very oblique. Almost never do his questions mean nothing. Usually something interesting results. Sometimes something sensational. I'm learning a lot from him. I think I am. It was that way regarding the tribe story. There were little questions about the tribe I could have ignored, about a jailbreak in Kentucky, about a woman named Fayoni. One huge story developed, and one very good story. This guy Blair is waiting for me. How did you meet Mr. Fletcher, Jack? How did your paths cross? Jack said, ask him. Chapter 2.
Jack!
Rising from behind his massive mahogany desk, the slim, graying man in the form-fitting blue suit seemed genuinely glad to see him. Smiling, he came around the desk and shook Jack's hand with both of his.
I've been seeing you around the office all week, of course, but I haven't had the chance to stop and say hello.
His gray eyes were not smiling. Are you Mr. Blair? The smiling secretary had nodded Jack through the office door without speaking.
Alex,
the man continued to hold Jack's hand.
Call me Alex.
Returning to his desk, Blair nearly sang,
What a wonderful story! So glad to nail those racist bastards. Wish we could rid the world of that scum for all time. We're so damn pleased you brought the story to Global Cable News.
He sat in the tall leather swivel chair behind his desk.
Sit down, Jack, sit down.
Sitting, Jack looked around the office. All the wood was mahogany, or appeared to be. Everything else Jack had seen in the GCN building was glass, steel, plastic. Very good plastic, of course. In the mahogany bookcases were television screens, rows of them. So, Jack said, you're the guy who fixes the TVs?
What?
Blair followed Jack's eyes to the rows of TV sets.
Oh, he chuckled. A little joke.
Jack smiled his agreement with Blair's assessment. Blair stirred some papers around on the glass surface of his desk.
We need your social security number.
Jack reached for his wallet.
I thought you'd never ask. Where are you going to assign me?
Where what?
The man kept his eyes on his desk. I'm free to take a foreign assignment, Jack said. Not married, not entangled.
We have your name as John Fayoni.
He spelled Fayoni.
Have we been right about that?
Yes, Jack answered, J-O-H-N.
You know, we don't even have your address.
I don't have one here in Washington yet. Will I need one? You've been putting me up in a motel down the highway.
Oh, yes, is it comfortable?
I don't know. I've been spending day and night in this building getting these stories out. This is the first morning I've had nothing to do.
I had lunch in that motel once.
Was it good? Blair's cheeks colored slightly.
Brunch, actually.
Oh, Jack said, you slept late. Jack handed his social security card to Blair and recited his mother's address in Indiana.
Blair asked, How did you happen to come across Mr. Fletcher?
At Jack's lack of response, Blair continued.
Very fortunate for us you did. Mr. Fletcher is a great friend to all of us here at GCN. On the board of directors, a consulting-slash-contributing editor. But working as he does in his own unorthodox ways, well outside, away from the network, he brings great freshness to us. Keeps us honest in some ways. However it happened, you were very lucky to cross paths with him.
Yes, Jack said, lucky.
He worked with you on the tribe stories, yet accepted no credit for them.
Jack said nothing.
What did you say your relationship is with Mr. Fletcher?
Relationship? Jack would be damned before he would state his relationship with the member of the board of directors of Global Cable News, consulting-slash-contributing editor Irwin Morris Fletcher. He would be damned if he would tell every turkey who gobbled, especially one who could influence his career positively, that the above-described Irwin Morris Fletcher was the real and natural father he had always heard about, read, dreamed about. And that Jack had arranged to meet for the first time ever only the week before. That the tribe exposé was Jack's story, and that Jack had gone well out of his way to suck the aforesaid Fletcher Sr. reluctantly into the investigation of the story to see what his father was really like.
and so that his father could see what he, Jack, was really like. Not his style.
Yes, I mean, we're puzzled as to why he gave you these stories on the tribe, worked with you, then sent you to us. Why didn't he use our own people?
This was my story, Jack said. I set it up. Mr. Fletcher didn't become involved until nearly the end of the investigation.
So, Blair smiled knowingly. You involved him in it so you could have access to global cable news.
Jack said nothing.
Very generous of him, Blair insisted. Typical of him, I must say.
Blair handed a thick folded paper across the desk to Jack.
Lucky for us, Blair said. Lucky for you. I couldn't stand the sight of those people myself.
Jack unfolded the paper. It was a check drawn on a global cable news bank account for a large sum of money. It was made out to John Faoni. That's nice, Jack said.
Commensurate with our appreciation, Blair said. Your stories on the tribe made quite an international splash. Shouldn't be surprised if they won us some prizes.
Let's hope, Jack said. He was puzzled by the large amount of the check. So, I get one of these every week?
Pardon?
What? First, Jack had asked what his assignment would be, and had had no answer. Just what will my annual salary be?
From?
Blair let the preposition hang in the air. Jack realized he had let a proposition hang in the air, a presumption. Global Cable News.
You're not an employee of Global Cable News, Mr. Faoni.
But we looked at your work as a favor to Mr. Fletcher. It just happened to work out this time.
You're not offering me a job?
Of course not. We don't even know you. You arrived here looking like something washed up on the beach, carrying a sack of videotapes and computer disks, which we were able to use. I understand we only had one phone call from Mr. Fletcher. If we hadn't had that, you never would have gotten in the door.
I had the story.
And we gave you credit. And, Blair's gray eyes looked at the check in Jack's hand,
payment.
Jack looked down at the check. You're paying me off?
With thanks. Didn't Andy tell me you're still in journalism school somewhere?
I can't go back there, not at this point.
Well, wait till the term rolls round again. You have the money in your hands for a nice vacation. My wife and I are very fond of taking the train trip across Canada. Magnificent scenery, excellent service.
You're not offering me a job?
Things are tight here now, Jack. There's so much competition in this business. We have difficulty, you see, in persuading all American businesses they should spend as much as 80% of their gross income on advertising. A few still resist the idea. We're not exactly laying people off, but we are not replacing people who leave for one reason or another. What we need are young people with experience. Just because you've worked on one story, we do not consider you experienced.
It was my story. My name was on it. It was a great story. You said it'd be a prize winner.
Yes, Blair smiled. We're very grateful to Mr. Fletcher.
Jack tightened his jaw. He was sorely tempted. He had to remind himself of what was his style and what wasn't.
Naturally, Blair said softly, we hope that if you ever come across another story like the tribe, you'll talk to us about it first. Maybe a little earlier in the investigation of the story. We have more experienced people here. I mean, that story really should have been a team effort.
A team effort? Jack could not imagine a TV film crew swarming the tribe's encampment and getting much of a story. That wouldn't have been journalism. That would have been publicity.
We would like to have vetted some of the things you undoubtedly did to get that story with our legal department, for example. We can only hope that legal repercussions won't develop from your work. I'm advised there are certain concerns that might be raised regarding privacy issues.
You're worried about being sued by white supremacists for my invading their privacy?
You were on private land. The computer system you broke into.
Lord love a duck, Jack said. You television wallets just want pictures.
And of course you started the story while you were in prison, didn't you?
You don't understand that? I was placed in the prison.
I know what I've heard. One never knows what's true.
One doesn't? Jack's mouth was dry. Isn't that what this business is about?
Oh, sure.
Blair's smile was sardonic.
That's what I mean, Jack. You need experience. Go back to school. Go somewhere you can do lots of stories. Develop a first-class resume. Right now, left school, prison, white supremacists. Who knows what you are? A diamond in the rough, maybe.
Check in hand, Jack rose from his chair. It's been nice meeting you, Mr. Blair. He reached his arm across the mahogany desk. Blair rose and shook Jack's hand.
Hope you don't mind my giving you a little fatherly advice, Blair said. You got credit for this big story, but it's ours now. We bought it. It's over. And essentially, you are untried. You lucked out once. This is over. It's a big, dirty world out there. No one knows you are living. Go back to school, get a job, get married, have kids. Who knows? You might be happy in some other line of work altogether.
Still holding Blair's hand, staring into his gray eyes, Jack said, Sorry you fell overboard. My door is always closed to you.
What?
Uncertainly, Blair chuckled. Jack said, Bye. Chapter 3
Vendemia, good morning. How may I help you?
Will you ring the American Girl Rose Suite, please?
Jack asked.
Ringing?
Again, Jack was using Andy Sist's phone.
No answer, sir, in the American Girl Rose Suite. I'm calling for Ms. Shauna Stoffel. I doubt Ms. Stoffel would be in her room at 11:30 in the morning, sir. Hold on.
Jack held. At the moment, he didn't much care what this personal telephone call cost global cable news.
Sir, I've tried the outdoor pool, the spa, the skeet shooting range, the golf house, and the stables. Is there anywhere else you think I should try?
Yeah, the phone outside the gas station in the village.
Sorry, sir, that's a payphone. We can't plug into that.
May I leave a message?
Certainly, sir. This is Jack Fayoni. The message is, prepare the cactus suite, cause...
Fletch, hello?
Hey, Dad.
Ugh. What's the matter?
Nothing. Something made my ears block.
Fletch wondered if he'd ever get used to the word dad. There must be some alternative. The young man so enjoyed using it. Until a week before, Fletch had never known he had a son. He still hadn't taken legal advice to prove that one John Fletcher Fayoni was his son.
Where are you? Jack asked.
Approaching Forward, Wisconsin, from the southeast.
I'm surprised you dare show your face in that burg.
Thought I'd better clean up the mess I helped make for your mother. Today is moving day for the denizens of Blythe Spirit.
Your story on GCN closed down Mama's favorite fat farm?
As a journalist, never be the rooster who believes it is only his crowing which brings up the sun.
Now what'll she do?
The state of Wisconsin is closing it down for health reasons while handing out fraud indictments to everyone involved they can find.
Are you going to pick her up?
Is that a joke?
You can't pick up a woman who weighs over 600 pounds. Mama done told me you are always picking up all kinds of women.
I am driving a rented handicap van with an hydraulic lift.
She'll be furious with you. Blythe Spirit has become her home away from home.
And her major expense. A lot of good it was doing her. Did you know the staff at Blythe Spirit had pretty well convinced your mother she must plan to spend the rest of her life with them?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. With one hand, they fed her appetites. With the other hand, they fed her despair while somehow continuing to pick her pockets. For a bright woman such as your mother, that took real sleight of hand.
It's okay, Dad. As her son, I can tell you she might take a swing at you, but she can't catch you. Just don't ever let her fall on you.
Fletch said, You mean again?
Again.
Look what happened last time she fell on me.
Yeah, Jack said. I happened. Aren't you glad?
We'll see.
Sure you are.
Now I know why you're so nimble-footed.
Live with a 600-plus-pound mama for a while, Jack said, and you learn to take short, rapid, circuitous steps. Do-si-do.
So, how are you doing, Nijinsky?